Hello there, this is Salisa and Jeff, and before we kick off this episode of the Leading Learning Podcast, we have a small request. If you've listened to the show before and gotten value out of it, or if you're someone listening for the first time and you find this episode valuable, please leave a rating and brief review for the Leading Learning Podcast on Apple Podcasts, formerly known as iTunes, by going to leadinglearning.com/apple.
Reviews play an important role in the long-term success and sustainability of any podcast. Your reviews help us attract new listeners, and they help show sponsors that the show is reaching listeners and having an impact. We understand all too well how busy you are, so please know that we really appreciate each and every review we receive. We'd be truly grateful if you would take just a moment to contribute a review today. Now, on with the show.
If you're a leader or an aspiring leader in the business of lifelong learning, you're in the right place. I'm Salisa Steele.
And I'm Jeff Cobb, and this is the Leading Learning Podcast.
Welcome to episode 189 of the Leading Learning Podcast, where we talk with Bill Draves, president of the Learning Resources Network, or LEARN, and author of 9 Shift, Work, Life, and Education in the 21st Century. But before we get to the interview, we want to take a moment to highlight a recent review of the show and express our appreciation.
This review comes from Jack Corson, who says, "Leading Learning is outstanding," with an exclamation point. And he writes, "If you work at the intersection of education and business, especially in the association world, you need to check out this podcast. I'm not always as good as I should be about my own professional development, and I'm a bit of an introvert, so I don't have a massive professional network, but just knowing 2 names, Salisa Steele and Jeff Cobb, and listening to the Leading Learning Podcast helps me stay attuned to the industry and aware of the people in it. The podcast goes deep into the weeds of adult learning tactics, and it also pulls back out to look at the bigger strategic picture and reflect. It purposefully pulls in diverse perspectives from across our industry and makes important connections from the outside, too. I get actionable insights from listening, and equally as important, it inspires me to think of new ideas and new opportunities. It's easily a must-listen podcast." So thanks so much for leaving that review, Jack, and for giving us a 5-star rating.
Yes, thank you very much. We are truly grateful for that review and rating, and we should also note that Jack has been on the show before. He is a frontline learning business professional, and I had the chance to speak with him in episode 163 about the work his organization, the American Speech Language Hearing Association, is doing with microlearning. So we'll be sure to link to that episode in the show notes. But for now, let's get back to the focus of this episode. Jeff, tell us a little bit about what you and Bill Draves cover.
Well, I had the pleasure of meeting Bill and actually interviewing him many years ago, and he's someone I've always respected as a thought leader in lifelong learning and as a pioneer in the area of lifelong learning as a business. And we spend a good bit of time discussing his book, 9 Shift, because as becomes clear in the episode, 2020 is a pivotal year for the book, or at least for the main argument of the book. So we look at some of the predictions that Bill and his co-author, Julie Coates, made and how they've played out. And then we also, of course, talk about the role of learning businesses in the 21st century and how they're going to need to adapt and evolve. And I'll also mention just one fun fact about Bill that I didn't manage to bring up in the interview. He's a cousin to Peter Tork, who was, until he passed away earlier this year, the bass player and keyboardist for the Monkees. And older listeners may remember the TV show if you saw it in its original form or in its rerun versions. And probably most listeners have heard some of their classics, like Take the Last Train to Clarksville and I'm a Believer. In any case, Bill told me that Peter was a heck of a nice guy, and it must run in the family because I think Bill is a heck of a nice guy, and I know listeners are going to enjoy this conversation with him.
So, hey, we're not the Monkees, but we can go ahead and roll the interview with Bill Drake.
Hello, and welcome to the Leading Learning Podcast. I'm Jeff Cobb, and today I am very happy to be joined by Bill Draves. Bill is president of the Learning Resources Network, or LEARN, which, as the world's largest association in continuing education and lifelong learning, serves more than 9,000 professionals every year. He's the author of multiple books, one of which we will definitely discuss as part of this episode. And he is a much sought after speaker. Indeed, one of the many people who has heard him said that he would, quote, trample my grandma to hear Draves speak. Fortunately, no one will need to trample their grandmother to hear Bill speak on the Leading Learning podcast, but you might want to find a quiet place and maybe a good set of headphones for what I know is going to be a very interesting conversation. Bill, welcome to Leading Learning.
Good to talk with you again, Jeff. Thanks for having me.
Well, I'm so glad you're here. We got to talk a long time back on the Mission to Learn podcast, back when I was just a mere babe in the woods around podcasting. So hopefully I'm a little more skilled now in conducting a good interview. And I gave a little bit of background on you as we were starting there. But I mean, you've really had a long and rich history in this whole world of lifelong learning that we both work in. And so to start things off, what else would you like to highlight for listeners about you and your work as a background for our conversation?
Well, one, I came out of the 1960s. That's when I went to college. And the whole idea that anyone can learn and anyone can teach was actually heresy back then. Mm. The New York Times wrote an editorial against us. And so I came out of into education from the point of view of grassroots community education, in which our philosophy at that time moved from heresy to something that everybody accepts today. And so it's been a terrific ride over the last 40 to 50 years.
And if I remember, I mean, before you started to learn, or learn grew out of essentially a free university of some sort. Am I correct in remembering that?
Yes, free universities were those community and campus organizations that just sprouted up all over North America to teach guitar and a few political things and yoga, and to allow anybody to teach and anybody to learn.
That's such a great background, and it's nice we've seen, I guess, something of a return to something like that with what the internet and the web have now enabled us to do, and certainly like to get into that a little bit in our conversation. But you know, one of the ways that I came to know about you originally many years ago was through a book that you co-authored with Julie Coates, and that book was Nine Shift: Work, Life, and Education in the 21st Century. And this is an important year for the book. It's one of the reasons we really wanted to have you on, because the changes that you highlighted in it were ones that you said were going to play out between the year 2000 and 2020. So those, you know, first 20 years of the 21st century. So, I mean, first, for listeners who may not be aware of the book, or, you know, who like me have aging and foggy memories, could you explain the premise behind that title, Nine Shift? What is a nine shift?
Great question. A nine shift is that 9 hours of our day are spent differently in the new economy, the new age, than it was spent just 20 years ago in the old age. We're moving out of the industrial age, the age of the factory, and into knowledge society. And that transformation is essentially completed in another 7 months, by 2020. This change, where 75% of life changes, happens just within 20 years. And if we go back 100 years ago, we can see that same change happened all over North America as we move from the agrarian age, where 50% of people lived on family farms, into the industrial age. And so Nine Shift was written to predict the changes that would happen in the first 20 years of the 21st century by essentially, we look back 100 years ago and we said the same thing will happen all over again. And we came up with 9 different major changes. But the main idea behind Nine Shift is, you got to sleep, you got to eat, That takes up 12 hours, but 9 of those other awaking 12 hours, 75%, is different in this century than it was just 20 years ago in the last century.
And I think the analogies that that you draw, the comparisons that you draw, are really compelling, and I definitely want to get into some of those. The major driver for the change that you identify from agrarian to industrial is the automobile. It's not electricity or some of the other big things that came along. The automobile just really changed things. For this shift, it's really the internet. That's shifting things. I mean, can you talk a little bit more about, how the auto changed things so much and why the internet is the big driver now?
Sure. Well, it was the automobile that defined the last century. It was, one, transportation. Two, it was where people lived. That is, you moved to the suburbs. And then three, it was the factory. The mass production of the automobile then spread to every other tangible good. And we measured success in the last century with tangible goods. And it changed all of life, even sports and our leisure time. And so the internet, and then technically, the World Wide Web, which was invented between 1989 and 1992 by Tim Berners-Lee, has done the same. It is the technology that changes life in this century. And so when you have a technology that is so huge that it changes how people work, then you see the same dominoes falling. Jobs get changed, life and the family reorients itself around work, and then even leisure reorients itself around the technology for the new age.
And as you have noted, you do identify not just the concept of nine shift, but also nine key shifts that are happening that you elaborate on in the book. And, we're not going to have time to discuss each of those in detail during this episode, but I do want to list them out because I think many listeners will just get them intuitively by hearing them. And then I'm hoping maybe we can, focus in on a few of them. So the shifts are one, people work from home. Two, intranets replace offices. Three, networks replace the pyramid. Four, trains replace cars. Five, communities become dense. Six, new societal infrastructures evolve. Seven, this one's kind of provocative, cheating becomes collaboration. Eight, half of all learning is online. And nine, education becomes web-based. And these are the nine shifts that are due to occur between 2000 and 2020. And again, we'll list those out in the show notes and, of course, encourage people to get the book in the first place if they haven't, to read all about these. But I know in the past, and I believe this was in a TED Talk that you gave, I've heard you refer to three of those as kind of the big three, and those were people work from home, trains replace cars, and communities become dense. Now, are those still your big three at this point?
Yes. The people work from home, and we now define home as wherever you want to be and where you can work best, is clearly the silent revolution that is driving the others. And so workplaces become more dispersed. That's why we have e-learning and online learning. Working from home, people are 25% more productive than people who work in a centralized office. So that is clearly what is driving the workplace. Now, trains replacing cars may still be maybe the most controversial one out there. We maintain all nine shifts have occurred. Right. We're now talking about history in the past. now, but trains clearly. Just in the last 2 months, you can see over in Europe that they want to ban short-haul flights because trains are so good for the environment. You can work on a train. You can't work while you're driving. That's the principal reason why trains are replacing cars. But then combine that with the environment and the safety factors, the speed factor, and the fact that people are moving by the millions into dense communities. First in major cities, we're seeing that now, but we will soon see that into medium-sized towns with a train station. I was at Chatham outside of Toronto, between Windsor and Toronto, and they're on the line for the train between Toronto and Windsor. So they are in line to also see that kind of growth.
Well, and the trains replace cars. One is one that I have to say is kind of dear to my own heart. And I feel like it's primarily the United States that's the culprit in not making the kind of progress in that it should. I know I've been fortunate to be able to travel quite a bit in Europe. And I know when we go to Europe with the family, we were in England last year, and we planned, most of it around train, because you can take trains just about everywhere. Same on the continent, and same in, so many other countries. And then I know here in the Triangle area, Raleigh, Durham, Chapel Hill of North Carolina, where I live, they've been talking about a light rail line for more than a decade now, which would just be miraculous for this area because the congestion's getting so bad. It would connect things together, and there just doesn't seem to be the political will to make it happen. But it has to be an inevitability. It's not going to happen by 2020, unfortunately, but hopefully it's going to happen in my lifetime.
Yes, and Canada and the United States are the last countries in the advanced world to have high-speed trains. And that's another thing that happens when you move into a new age. You have to start all over. And so some nations, some cities, some states go into decline and others rise. But clearly, 100 years ago, there were still people who fought automobiles and cars. In 1926, there was a song about how great the horse and buggy was. And Henry Ford fought to ban that song because he was still threatened by the horse and buggy in 1926. And of course, my wife grew up walking behind her grandfather's mule in the early 1950s. So, things do take a while and change doesn't happen everywhere at the same time, but we clearly have the blueprint now. We know it's going to happen.
Yeah.
Light rail will come to the Triangle area and everywhere else.
Well, it's funny, just as we were talking, to flip back to that first of the big three around people working from home. I've been thinking about a lot of trends and rereading your book and, things like Uber and self-driving cars coming along and how that, is possibly impacting the trains replace cars component of things. But then the people work from home. I mean, we've had such a freelance revolution. Partly by choice, sometimes not so much by choice, over the course of the last several years, that, a huge percentage of the population now has no office to go to. I mean, that basically, they're going to be working from home, or they're going to be working in Starbucks, they're going to be working independently as freelancers. And there are good sides and bad sides to that, but it doesn't seem to be something that's going to go away anytime soon. So it just seems to be in line with that first big shift, the people work from home that you identified.
Yeah, the gig economy is part of that. But the heart and guts of the new economy is the knowledge worker. And the knowledge worker has a college degree or the equivalent, and then deals with intangibles, almost always working online. And this is the work sector that's most important. In the last century, it was factory workers, because factory workers brought in 4 jobs per factory worker. In this century, we don't have factory workers, and right. we won't. And so the knowledge worker creates 4 additional jobs. I was sitting on an airplane next to a guy. I said, "What do you do?" He says, "I move grain on freight trains." And I said, "Great. When have you been last on a freight train?" He said, "Oh, years ago." And he's never seen a grain elevator, but he logs on and tells everybody else what grain goes in what car on what train, and everybody else's job is dependent on this guy. That's a knowledge worker.
Yeah,
and there's millions of them in every occupation, and that's the heart and guts of the work sector that needs retraining and ongoing e-learning and training and education.
If your goal is to deliver effective e-learning to support the knowledge workers in your audience, be sure to check out our sponsor for this quarter. WBT Systems develops the industry-leading top-class LMS, which delivers transformative professional development experiences for education and certification programs. With a single point of support from in-house integration experts, top-class LMS easily integrates with a wide variety of systems to provide efficient administration and a unified learning experience. WBT supports organizations in using learning technology to help drive growth in membership, increase revenues, and enhance the learning experience. WBT believes in truly understanding your challenges and partnering with you to ensure the success of your education programs. Find out more at leadinglearning.com/WBT. And now back to the interview as Jeff and Bill turn to the issue of access to learning for everyone who is impacted by the 9 shift.
This might be a good time then to turn to kind of how people get the access to that they need, you know, how we get all of these knowledge workers and make sure everybody does stay up to speed, has the opportunities that we would want for them to have in this new century. And specifically, you know, I'm thinking about touching on it's your 6th shift, which is new societal infrastructures evolve. And I'm actually going to quote something you say in the book about this. You say, "This is one shift that is not inevitable, not solely dependent on the unassailable economic forces resulting from the power of the internet. This is a shift dependent on volition, on communities and societies making a conscious choice. This is not automatic." You know, and you're talking about, you know, the shift that we're going to need to make for there to be the kind of economic equity that needs to be out there for people to get access to these new knowledge jobs, to get access to the learning that they need for these new knowledge jobs. What's your, and you know, in the midst of the, I guess, the turmoil that we seem to be in the United States right now, socially and politically, what's your perspective on that shift at this point?
Yes, I totally agree with you, or restating what we said, that 100 years ago, Russia, Japan, Europe, and the U.S. all became industrialized societies, but they did it in different ways, and we can clearly see how each of those nations had a different infrastructure and a mode of life. And so today we're doing that as well. The thing that sticks out in my mind continually on a daily basis is that in this century, we need 50% of our people to have a 4-year college education and degree. And the U.S. is only at 28% right now. And when you look at unemployment for college graduates is 2%. It's rock bottom. There's nobody else out there with a college degree. And every study and company will tell you that the greatest need, they need, you know, unskilled labor and factory, but the greatest need is for people with a college education. Mm. So when we talk about infrastructure, it starts with actually education and businesses current really tough. It's tough out there now hiring more college graduates because you're competing there for that 2%. And so that would be my starting point for infrastructure for our country.
And then this, I guess, probably overlaps with that, but then I think goes beyond that. You know, you talked about the concept of individual learning accounts in that particular chapter of the book. Is that, you know, is that a concept you're still high on? And, you know, do you see any more receptivity to it at this point? And I'm thinking mainly in the United States. It has happened in other countries.
Yeah. The idea of an individual learning account is, as we've mentioned, workers are mobile. And have to be mobile, and companies have to be mobile. The idea of lifetime employment doesn't serve anybody, either the company or the employee anymore. And so that's why, you know, to put it bluntly, why we're going to have universal health care just like every other advanced nation in the world, because workers can't move and companies have to keep employees because they don't want to move simply because of health benefits. So learning benefits, an individual learning account would be the same thing. That is, employees, employers, and then when, in the case of low-income people and undereducated, the government would pitch in. And fund a person's individual learning account where they could spend it on a wide variety, but certainly not frivolous, activities to enhance their learning. And what we know now is people are going to have, well, you know, they say 5 to 7 careers and umpteen jobs. A job is like a gig now. And so your skill set has to change as the circumstances change out there in society and with your own career and your direction of your company currently. So we've got to be very flexible in terms of ongoing learning. 20 years ago, I don't think we talked about cross-training. Now it's like absolutely essential and acquiring new skill sets, which is why certificates are so popular right now.
Right.
We work with nonprofit colleges, universities, schools, but that's why, because there's a skill set there that's comprehensive, intensive, but you can go in different directions with those skill sets.
If you need to deliver education to support certificate programs and other types of credentials, we suggest you visit our sponsor for this quarter. Community Brands provides a suite of cloud-based software for organizations to engage and grow relationships with the individuals they serve, including association management software, learning management software, job board software, and event management software. Community Brands' award-winning Crowd Wisdom learning platform is among the world's best LMSs for corporate extended enterprise and is a leading LMS for association-driven professional education programs. Award-winning Freestone, Community Brands' live event learning platform, is a leading platform for live learning event capture, webinars, webcasts, and on-demand streaming. Find out more at leadinglearning.com/communitybrands. And now back to Jeff and Bill as they discuss how learning businesses must evolve and adapt to address the needs of the 21st century.
And that might be a great place to pivot to, you know, I think a topic that certainly definitely overlaps with Nine Shift and the whole shift that we have been experiencing. And that's, you know, into this whole world of lifelong learning and the business of lifelong learning. You know, the vast majority of the listeners here on Leading Learning, that's what they do. They are professionals in the business of lifelong learning, continuing education, professional development. That's obviously, you know, been the focus of your career. You know an awful lot about different types of lifelong learning, about being in the business of lifelong learning. You know, how have you seen, you know, and maybe LEARN members or just, you know, organizations in general in the business of lifelong learning, how have you seen them evolve and adapt as this century has progressed from, you know, 2000 to 2020? And probably more importantly, how do they need to evolve and adapt at this point to make sure that they're playing the role that's going to make them most valuable?
Well, you've hit on the central issue that I'm debating with myself on a regular basis. Can organizations evolve and adapt, or is there going to be some cataclysmic change that's going to devastate modes of learning and maybe even organizations? So I started 2000 right up until 2015 thinking that education would go through the transformation between 2000 and 2020, just like society. And then around 2015, looking back, when John Dewey wrote his classic work in 1916, and we went on a tear changing education, which really went on in the 20s. That's when it really happened.
Interesting.
And by 1930, then we had an education system for this last century. So right now, economically, society is positioned in 2020 for the knowledge society, but not education. And so we still have 10 years to go where all of us engaged in lifelong learning. And to be clear, learning in society is one system. You could put a five-year-old in a classroom and that child would know where the teacher's going to stand and where he or she is supposed to sit. And you don't even have to ask now. When you walk in as a 35-year-old, you know where the teacher's going to stand and where you're supposed to sit. So we are really one basic system. And so whether we're dealing with lifelong learning and continuing education, like most of us are, or not, it is being dramatically changed. I call it transformed, and we won't see that complete transformation till 2030.
Well, I love that you brought up that point about John Dewey, writing in that 1915, 1916 period. Because, I mean, his thinking really was a huge part of what drove that transformation. And we need the equivalent of that thinking for this age, which, of course, you're providing. I like to hope I'm providing some of it. There are a lot of people out there doing it. Maybe this time it's more likely to come from a network than from an individual. It is upon us all now to make that transformation happen. Or I worry about the same question that you brought up. How many of the traditional institutions, organizations, providers of that system that you just so aptly described are not going to make it because they haven't really figured out what's necessary as we move into the new economy. So interesting times ahead to see how it all pans out. My understanding is that we're coming up on 2020, reaching the end of that window on nine shift. My understanding is you have plans to commemorate that in some way. Is that the case?
Yes, we're going to do a grand finale in November, celebrating transition from one age into another, and nine shift will, the story is told, and all of those nine shifts have happened. So there's still future, and I think we still have 10 years to go on how education changes, but basically nine shift is going to have a big send off, and we hope to have it online, streamed live, from San Diego, and we'll complete the story.
Well, that would certainly be appropriate for an organization that well, you exist virtually. You use a virtual office, basically, and obviously you're also very involved in online education. So having virtual access to the grand finale is completely appropriate. Before we wrap up, this has been a fantastic conversation. So glad that we were able to get you on. I'm particularly interested to ask you this question. It's something we ask of all people who come on the show, but because you are somebody who's so deeply involved in lifelong learning, interested to hear your response. And the question is, what's one of the most powerful learning experiences that you personally have been involved in as an adult since finishing your formal education?
Yeah, it would have to be sitting at the feet of the masters. And that would be people in a variety of different fields. I mean, I did get the chance to sit at the feet of Malcolm Knowles, the greatest adult educator of the last century. But also people who grew up in the 1920s and their amazing tales and things that you can't learn online from people. And currently, there's a guy who's into trains, and he knows everybody and everything about trains in the whole United States. And again, just sitting and listening and being able to ask questions. Mm-hmm. I think questions, I'm now making my students in my online classes ask questions. Because I think it is so critical to learning and really work. So I would have to say sitting at the feet of somebody who has had an extraordinary experience and or expertise.
Yeah, I love that answer. And we should all be looking for those people and making them a part of our lives. And I love that point about questions too. I'll say one of the things that that I've come to deeply appreciate about, hosting a podcast and interviewing people is if you're going to do it well, you have to put a lot of thought into what are good questions to ask. And, I've got miles to go to get great at it, but that is a learning experience. And it, means that that I learn a lot from these podcast interviews. So speaking of which, thanks so much. Well, thank you. And we're truly grateful to have had you on. I'm realizing now we should have had you on much earlier, and we'll have to have you on again at some point before too long. But thanks so much for taking the time today for this episode. If listeners want to learn more about you and your work or even connect with you, where should they go?
Our website is learn.org, L-E-R-N, no A in learn, .org. Me personally, williamdraves.com.
Well, great. And I do encourage listeners to check out the Learn website, check out Bill's website. Definitely go get Nine Shift and read it or reread it if you have not already. We'll put all of these links into the show notes, as we always do, for you to check out there. But in the meantime, Bill, thanks so much for being a guest on Leading Learning.
My pleasure. Thanks, Jeff.
That wraps up our interview with Bill Draves. For show notes, go to leadinglearning.com/episode189.
And when you check out the show notes, you'll also see various options for subscribing to the podcast. If you're getting value out of what you hear, we'd be truly grateful if you would subscribe, as it helps us get some data on the impact of what we're doing.
We'd also be grateful if you would take just a minute and give us a rating on Apple Podcasts, formerly known as iTunes. To do that, you can go to leadinglearning.com/apple. That will put you in the right place. Jeff and I personally appreciate your rating and review, but even more importantly, those reviews and ratings play a really big role in helping the podcast show up when people search for content on leading a learning business.
And another thing that plays a big role is our sponsors. So we would be grateful if you would check them out. Find out more about WBT Systems at leadinglearning.com/WBT and find out what Community Brands has to offer at leadinglearning.com/communitybrands.
Finally, please tell others about the podcast. You can send out a tweet by going to leadinglearning.com/share. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/leadinglifelonglearning. You can like us and share us with others on Facebook. However you do it, please spread the word about Leading Learning.
Thanks again, and we'll see you next time on the Leading Learning Podcast.